If you, who make less than $250,000 a year, which includes 98% of small business owners, you will not see your taxes increase one single dime. Make less than $250,000 a year, which includes 98% of small business owners, you will not see your taxes increase one single dime. $250,000 a year, which includes 98% of small business owners, you will not see your taxes increase one single dime.
Okay, that was it. That was the taxer-in-chief, Barack Obama, promising you, the American people, that if you make under $100,000 a year, your taxes would not go up one dime. He later reiterated that your taxes of any kind would not go up one dime. He campaigned on the fact that your taxes would not go up one dime. If you make under $100,000 a year and your taxes haven't gone up one dime, you call and tell me, because you're pretty alone out there. Now, we've spent several weeks here on the Fair Tax Show laying out the groundwork. We talked quite a bit about the history of how the income tax came about, how the income tax came into being as a promise to the American people that it was going to be a quote-unquote tax on the rich, and that for a couple of years it was that way. You had to be making the equivalent of $60,000 or $70,000 in today's money before you were taxed anything. But before long, the government got hungrier and hungrier, and income tax began creeping down, and pretty soon everyone was paying income tax. And so they instituted this thing called withholding, so that they could hold your income tax out of your pay every week, and you wouldn't even know how much you were paying at the end of the year. I mean, go up to a friend of yours and say to your friend, how much do you make? And if your friend cares to respond, what your friend is going to say is, oh, I bring home $487 a week. Oh, you know, I get $396 a week. No, not how much do you have left when you get done working 40 hours a week? How much do you make a week? I really don't know. How much tax do you pay? Ask your friend. Well, you know, I don't pay anything. I get it all back at the end of the year. Well, no, you don't. You don't get back the Social Security tax you paid, even if you get back every penny of tax you paid in. And if you get back $3,000 a year, You'll say, as an answer to that question, oh, I get back $3,000 a year. Well, yeah, but they took $5,000 a year out of your pay. So then we went on to detail how the tax code had been finessed so that they could tax the profits of corporations. What you get when you tax the profits of corporations is a pass-through tax. In other words, the Nestle's candy bar company, they have nowhere to get the money they pay the federal government, except in the $1.25 you pass across the counter when you buy a Three Musketeers bar. I mean, they don't have any place else to get money, so all the money they pay the federal government is in the cost of that Three Musketeers bar. So we did the math, and we looked at the economic studies that have been done by renowned economists like Jorgensen, and we found that 22% of everything you buy right now is federal tax, is tax that passes through from your hand through the retailer to the candy bar company, the company that buys gas to transport the candy bar, the guy that sells chocolate to the candy bar company, the company that makes the little wrappers that go around the candy bar. All of those people pay corporate tax. All of that tax passes right through to the cost of that candy bar, and 22% of the cost of that candy bar is federal tax. So you are currently paying a 22% sales tax on everything you buy to the federal government. Then we went on to talk about how corporations had learned to use this tax code to cheat both you as an American taxpayer. GE didn't pay any tax last year. You think they didn't make any profit? And to cheat competitors. So GE, because they make awesome profits, they get to pay lobbyists to get the tax code written to their advantage and to the disadvantage of you and me if we want to go out in our garage and invent a new light bulb. It all works against you, the taxpayer, and the small upstart business. That is a way that corporations have learned to use the income and corporate tax code to cheat the American people and to buy politicians. They buy politicians through the tax code. And politicians buy corporations through the tax code. Politicians actually court corporations for big, big donations with the promise of tax code change that favors that big corporation. And then we talked about after you have money withheld from your tax, after you pay 22% sales tax on everything you buy, we talked about the other costs of the current tax code. Aside from the 22 cents that goes into that candy bar that is the direct corporate tax paid by all the people along the way, half of those people pay millions of dollars a year for lobbyists. That's in the cost of that candy bar. They don't have anywhere else to get money, once again, but the money you pass across the counter for that candy bar. And in addition, they pay millions of dollars a year for accountants, tax lawyers, software. In addition, they pay half of every employee's Social Security. All of those costs are hidden in the cost of that candy bar. So you have enormous costs outside of just the direct costs of what you pay the government, what you pay the government through the candy bars that you buy, what you pay the government directly. You have immense costs of this current tax code. You have accountants, you have software companies, you have the time that you spend every year on your taxes. All of this is cost. And then you have another cost. You have a cost of the amount of money that you lost from the $3,000 that you got back at the end of the year by not having that in January and February and March. So the tax code does nothing but cost you, and it costs you a hell of a lot more than the tax you pay. There's got to be a better way to do it. And we introduced the fair tax, a simple 23% consumption tax. Call it a sales tax, call it a consumption tax, call it whatever you want. A simple 23% tax on retail, new retail goods and services that replaces, not as in addition to, replaces all income tax, estate tax, alternative minimum tax, excise tax, inheritance tax, you name it. Any other tax you pay the federal government goes away and gets replaced by a 23% sales tax. We talked about some of the upsides of this in recent weeks. We talked about the fact that 23%, which is where we would have to start if we instituted the fair tax tomorrow, is a revenue neutral number. Now, when you go out and preach this fair tax gospel to people who want some other system or who want to maintain the income tax, the first thing you're going to hear is, no, that's what we'd ought to do to revise the tax code is cut government spending. Well, yeah, we need to cut government spending. Anybody out there want to argue that we need to cut government spending? We need to cut government spending threefold, fourfold. We need to cut it in half or to a quarter of what it is now. I'd be happy with cutting off trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions. We need to. We've got to. We can't survive without doing that. But that's not even part of this argument. This argument isn't about how much we spend. It's not about how much we collect. It's about how we collect it. And we need to revise the tax code by cutting government spending is a devious way to get you off subject and to suggest that your way is evil, because to be revenue neutral, we have to start with a 23% sales tax tomorrow. That doesn't mean that when we cut government spending by $12 trillion, that sales tax won't come down to 4%. Just like income tax would come down. Just like property tax would come down. Just like whatever tax method that they want to suggest as an alternative would come down if we cut spending. But do this. When someone suggests to you that we replace the income tax with a property tax, or that we replace the income tax with some other kind of tax, say, what would that tax be to be revenue neutral? If we instituted that tax tomorrow, what would it be? And then we talked about some of the upsides. For example, aside from replacing all these taxes with one simple tax, you now are collecting tax. How can this be revenue neutral, you ask? Well, here's how. We're now collecting tax from every drug dealer, every illegal alien, every bricklayer who gets paid cash and pays no tax to match yours. We're now collecting tax from every tourist who comes to this country and drops thousands and thousands of dollars. So you've got all these new people that you're collecting tax from. Here's another upside we talked for an entire show about. Survey after survey after survey shows that if we introduce the fair tax tomorrow, companies would actually move their headquarters from foreign countries to the United States. We sit around, liberals or conservatives, and we moan and moan and moan day after day after day about how it is or why it is that all of these corporations are leaving the United States of America. It's because of our tax code. We tax the hell out of you for being successful. In the fair tax, there's no corporate tax code. We don't pass that 22% through some corporation or group of corporations down to a point where you pay for it at the counter anyway. There's no sense in us taxing you. You know, the beauty of the corporate tax code is that liberal after liberal after liberal can look to the government and say, yeah, tax me more. Tax me more. Just have the corporations collect it for you. Then comes the argument from these other alternative taxers. Well, aren't companies, aren't retailers being the tax collectors now? Well, yeah. But it's not hidden. It's not hidden in the price you pay. On every receipt that you get, it says you paid this much federal tax. And that's it. That's all the tax you paid. You didn't pay any hidden taxes. And as the cost of government comes down, you'll see that tax come down on your cash register receipt. And if they try to raise the price on you, they can't do it by hiding it in the cost of a can of coffee. It's on that sales tax receipt. And then we promised that when we got done with all the lessons, we would actually take on some of the myths and some of the outright lies and falsehoods that are being spread about the fair tax to try to divert your attention away from the fact that this tax is above all else fair. We spent two shows talking about specific cases. A case of a single mother with two children who works 40 hours a week for minimum wage. We showed you what she's paying the government now, even if she pays no income tax, just in Social Security tax. And then we took her to work and we gave her at the end of the week a check for every penny she earned, no deductions. Every penny she earned was in that check. And we showed how when she goes out with that check and buys things that she needs, that she can buy exactly the same things she bought before and still end up with $5,000 a year left over. Now, I get an email the next day that says, well, that's ludicrous. Of course, she's not going to bank that $5,000 a year. Everyone spends the money up to their, that they have. Fine. She has a $5,000 a year greater standard of living than she had the year before. $5,000 extra for a mother of two on minimum wage is a 27% pay raise. And then we took a family of four, a mother, a father, and two children, making $60,000 a year, and we gave them exactly the same lifestyle under the fair tax that they had before. We assumed that they spend every penny they make. They save nothing. They spend nothing on tuition. They spend every penny they make on taxable stuff. And at the end of the year, they end up $9,000 better. And then we went back to the very first show, and we talked about the main upside of the fair tax. It's fair, and here is the thing that really gets a burr under the saddle of flat taxers and income taxers and property taxers. And that is, it is no damn business of the government how much money you make or what property you have. This nation was founded on that principle. Your property is your property. Your income is your income. And the only way that those busybodies who want to make sure that they pay nothing and the rich man gets soaked, the only way they can get their hands on how much money you make is by taxing it. The only way they can make it their business how much property you have and what that property is to tax it. They can't stand the fact that it's no longer any of their business how much you make or how much you have. That's the bottom line of income and property tax. It gets to be my business how much you have and how much you make. And if it's more than me, I want you to pay some of it. If it's less than me, oh, well, then you're probably all right. It's probably okay for your fair share to be nothing. But if it's more than me, then your fair share suddenly becomes a whole hell of a lot than my fair share. That's what income tax is all about. That's what property tax is all about. I want to know what you've got. I want to know what you make. And if it's more than me, I want some of it. I might not want some of it in the form of you take money out of your pocket and give it to me, but I want some of it in that this United States military that protects us, you get to pay for it. I want some of it in all these services that I expect from the government. I want you to pay for. If you make more than me, I want some of it. That's what it boils down to. That's what income tax and property tax boil down to. So we're going to spend this show talking specifically about some of the arguments that you're going to run up against when you try to convince people that this fair tax is a tax that is an enhancement of liberty, that it is a tax that is fair, and that it is a tax that lends itself to explosive economic growth and prosperity for this country. We're going to take a quick break. We got a phone caller. We're going to see if he wants to get in on this, and then we're going to come right back.
The emergency destruct system is now activated.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
They told me that you had gone. Totally insane. And that your methods were unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
I didn't see any methods at all.
We're back on the Fair Tax Show. I'm Dave. This is our Saturday night presentation. Every week we come in here, we talk about the fair tax. I told you we've laid out, we spent several weeks here now laying out the groundwork. Now from here on, we're going to feature some guests. We're going to do some presentations. We're going to spend some time here in fellowship with you, teaching you how to go out into the world and battle this fair tax with those naysayers who want to know, whose primary goal is to find out how much money you make and to get their hands on part of it. We got a caller here, Steve. Yes. How you doing, Steve? Where are you from?
Fine, Dave. How are you?
I'm good. Where are you from, Steve?
I'm from Tennessee.
Tennessee. All right. We are our sister state, Tennessee.
Yes. Yes, that's true.
Yeah. So are you a fair tax proponent or opponent?
I'm for a flat tax. I'm not a fan of the fair tax. I'm for a very, very, very flat income tax.
Okay.
And Dave, I don't care. By the way, I don't know how much money you make, and individuals will never know how much the other person makes. So it's not. You keep saying that, but it's only the government really knows. So it's not that me knowing what you make. It has nothing to do with it.
Why is it the government's business what I make?
Well, that's another issue. Okay, we've been paying income taxes for 100 years, and we got to collect tax somehow. But before we get off on that tangent, I'd like to address. I'd like to spend some time. You addressed a lot of issues here, and I could spend as much time as you did. But I want to go over just a few things that you talked about.
Go for it.
First of all, you talked about those two families, like that poor person, that poor woman who's going to get another $5,000 a year, and about that middle class family who's going to get another $9,000 a year. Now let's remember that you said the fair tax. What's that?
Go ahead.
You said the fair tax is neutral. So, first of all, if those families are getting more money, somebody else is paying for it. And I'd like to point out, Dave, that the overall effect of this fair tax, which you advertise a great deal, is that poor people are going to get more money. You've just said that. You've just reiterated your illustration. So more money is going to poor people.
Really?
Yeah,
tell me how that works.
Well, you just explained that this poor woman's going to get $5,000 more.
I didn't say she's going to get. She's going to keep $5,000 more of her own money, money that she didn't get to keep last year.
So before she paid that in tax, and now she's not paying it in tax.
Correct.
So she's no longer paying. There's two things. Okay, let me put it this way. The poor people are coming off the tax rolls. They're paying no income tax, and they may not have paid any before. And now they're going to get free Social Security and Medicare, which I think is a terrible mistake. So number one, they're getting free Social Security and Medicare. Number two, Dave, I've taken a look at this prebate, and I've studied it. And I find this, that although you say that the prebate just keeps a poor person whole from paying any fair tax, that in several different ways, the prebate makes certain that poor people will get a bigger check, more dollars in prebate than they will ever pay in fair tax. So the prebate gives a poor person a net check in the pocket and also relieves the person from paying Social Security and Medicare taxes. Now, every advertisement I've seen about the fair tax is very proud of that. It shows, there's one that shows where you compare it to a modified flat tax, and you show that a poor person has a zero tax rate, and some fair taxes will admit that they may even have a negative tax rate. Okay? So the fair tax redistributes more wealth than we have today. Now, I know, Dave, that you think that that's fair, but that's a matter of politics. I think progressives, like you, believe it's fair that we should take money from people who work hard and give it to people who need it. Okay, that's what Karl Marx said. Take from each according to his means and give to each according to his needs. That's what Karl Marx thought was fair. I don't happen to think that's fair. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, let me move on to the next one.
Okay.
You say that when you see that receipt, you see the tax you pay, and that's all the tax here. There's no hidden taxes. I think that is just as misleading. First of all, you have hidden about 13.5% on top of the 30%. It's a 30% tax, by the way, Dave, the way most of us calculate sales taxes. If you spend $100 and you add $30 of fair tax, and the total is $130. Most of us divide the $30 by $100. It's a $30 sales tax. It's only the fair tax that takes a look at this by saying, no, 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 divide the $30 by $130. And a lot of people still don't understand that. They still don't understand how you get there. So it's a 30% sales tax. Now, that 30% sales tax would have to be 43.5%. Because what you did, though, is you took that 13.5% and you hit it. You made the state and the federal government pay fair tax. Now, your state, you live in Missouri. Where is Missouri going to get the money to pay the fair tax that the state of Missouri has to pay to the federal government? Look in the mirror, Dave. They've got to get it from you. And the same thing, the federal government has to pay fair tax on its purchases. Now, it's going to tax you in a sneakier way. It's going to print more dollars, which is a stealth tax, a tax by inflation. And so you'll never see the federal one, but it's going to eat your dollars away. So there's 13.5% that I say the fair tax hides. And there's also more tax that the fair tax hides. The fair tax guarantees that the almost 30% price increase we're going to get is going to be paid back to you in a sense, not paid back, but is going to be reflected in the Social Security COLAs. And the Social Security COLAs means almost 30% added to all Social Security benefits. That 30% is not figured into the fair tax rate. The federal government has a net increase in its budget for this Social Security COLA. Who's going to pay for that? We will. In addition, what the fair tax does is it takes away businesses and people who file payroll tax reports no longer have to pay the tax when they show earnings. I think that begs for Social Security to be defrauded. And so we will have phantom wages reported. We will have increased Social Security benefits in the future, and that all has to be paid for by taxpayers. And that's not reflected in the 30% rate either. Or even in the 43.5% rate. Now, you mentioned the 22% rate, and you mentioned Dale Jorgensen. Well, I did read what he said, Dave. While Dale Jorgensen said 22% embedded taxes the very first time, he came back and he clarified that, Dave. I'm using a nice word. He said that two-thirds of that 22% is not the taxes you pay, but those are the taxes. The price reduction would be if the employees gave up their raises. He said the only true amount, he said by two-thirds, he means is about 7% is really embedded taxes. The rest, the other 15%, is employees' taxes. And he admits that you're not going to get – employees will demand their raises. So the maximum that prices can go down is about 7%, not 22%. Okay. So, and by the way, when you say Dale Jorgensen loves this thing, Dale Jorgensen himself said that in trying to replace the income tax and payroll taxes and the state and gift is peanuts, but in trying to replace all three taxes, Dale Jorgensen, who was paid by the AFFT, said in doing this, the fair tax takes on too great a burden for it to carry. It's just too much. It doesn't work. It's too heavy a burden. I propose a flat income tax, Dave, a very, very flat income tax, and not the one that's in Congress right now. I propose one more adjustment onto that. H.R. 1040 is not quite good enough in my judgment. I think we need a 10% tax with zero exemptions, zero deductions. Everybody pays from dollar one. Now, this flat tax does not get rid of the payroll taxes, and it shouldn't. The Social Security and Medicare are individual benefit programs, and people should be paying for that. Divorcing paying for it from getting the pension is a gigantic socialist mistake, and I don't think we should make that socialist error. This flat tax that's in Congress would also get rid of the corporate income tax. Individuals would pay tax on business profits under a very simplified definition. So That's the issue, Dave, for the most part. You talked, you also mentioned, you mentioned costs. There are, by the way, you said that since this is revenue neutral, all those taxes you pay are still there. You're just going to pay them in a different form. The savings, the compliance cost, most of what the fair tax quotes, a $450 billion some odd fair tax, is mostly, most all of it, almost $400 billion of it, is this hypothetical cost to prepare your tax return. And even the IRS gave up on those methods about 7 or 8 years ago. And the cost, the time it takes you to do your tax return is not an out-of-pocket dollar cost. So the fair tax is supposed to have to collect the very same thing that all these taxes are collecting right now. This thing you mentioned about illegals. There's a University of Tennessee study by two economists who said they're not going to pay any more money than people are paying today. They're just going to pay it in a different way. And really, what you're missing the other side of the shoe when you say about a million criminals will now pay sales tax. Well, now you're going to have 319 million formerly honest citizens trying to avoid paying fair sales tax at every possible cost, which leads me really to another major point. Your fair tax, your economists assume that there will be zero fair tax evasion. On what planet is that? It's certainly not the one you and I live on. And that will destroy the revenues will come in very, 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 very short. Okay, and they have to be made up somehow. And the fair tax has very little room to make that up except by raising the rate. So big problems. Big, big problems with this fair tax, Dave. Huge problems.
Okay, all right, there we go. All right, now let's go back to the beginning here.
Sure.
The poor little lady who has two kids and works 40 weeks in a minimum wage job and gets to bring home about $100 less than she earns every week right now. All she's getting from the government, and we did the math, we did every bit of it. We spent quite a bit of time. We spent an entire show on her, in fact.
Yeah.
How is, you know, you keep saying like whatever she gets, someone else has to pay for.
Right.
Well, that isn't true. That isn't true at all. All the woman is getting is the sales tax that she pays up to a certain point. Now, yeah, she can actually have a net gain if she doesn't eat and she doesn't buy any clothes for her kids. But the
Dave?
Yes.
Dave?
Uh-huh.
Hey, let me give you a couple of things.
What's the pre-made?
Suppose this woman, like I see a lot of poor people where I live, okay?
Uh-huh.
And first of all, they buy a lot of stuff. I see these people shopping here at these yard sales all over the place. Okay? They ain't going to pay fair tax on first of all, used goods theoretically is exempt. Okay,
correct.
So when she buys,
let's not throw around words like theoretically. Used goods are exempt, okay?
Dave, do you realize, Dave, that when you buy something used, okay, you're going to have to produce two pieces of paper. One, you're going to have to produce a document which shows when the goods were produced, because if it was produced prior to the fair tax, there is no fair tax on it at all. And if it was produced after the fair tax came into existence, you, Dave, the buyer of those used goods, in order to claim an exemption for used goods, you will have to produce a copy of the receipt that showed that the seller paid fair tax when the seller bought it.
Okay.
That is a requirement for it to be exempt under the fair tax.
Under what fair tax? Now, what fair tax?
Under your fair tax, Dave.
Wait a minute. Where are you getting that from?
From the statute.
Where are you getting?
Dave.
Ah,
from the statute.
Okay. We made it clear for several shows in a row that we're not here trying to sell HR 25. We're here trying to sell the fair tax. Just like you're not here trying to sell the fair tax. Just
is,
like you're not. Okay. So wait a second.
HR 25 is the fair tax, Dave.
When you say you're in favor of the flat tax, you get to say, "Oh, I'm not in favor of the flat tax the way it's being presented in Congress now," right?
Absolutely. I told you what the bill is. I told you what the bill is, and I want to change to it.
We have never been in favor of H.R. 25. We're in favor of the fair tax. The fair
But the fair tax right now for the 15 years, Dave, the fair tax is H.R. 25.
Oh, okay. So the flat tax is what? What's the flat tax?
There is only one flat tax bill that I know of right now, which is H.R. 1040.
Okay.
And I propose it was just introduced this year, and I'm proposing. It's great, but it doesn't go far enough. I'm proposing changes to it. I propose Dr. Ben Carson 10% with zero exemptions. Okay, so that's the most important change that I would make to H.R. 1040. But H.R. 25, get back to the point, Dave. H.R. 2025, the fair tax that you're talking about, has a requirement that in order to claim the exemption for used property, if the property was developed after the fair tax came into existence, if it's new, you know, if it was sold new for the first time after the fair tax, and now you're buying it secondhand, you have to be able to prove that the person you bought it from paid fair tax. That is a requirement in the statute for you to claim the exemption. So it's not that it's exempt. It's exempt if you have proof that the seller paid fair tax or that the goods were purchased or manufactured prior to the fair tax coming into existence. So it's not exempt per se. It's exempt if you meet these other little requirements. There's always this stuff, little stuff in a statute, Dave.
Yeah.
Little stuff.
Exactly.
That you got to know.
Little stuff that you got to know. And we spent 2 weeks reviewing the statute and showing how we were not backing H.R. 25. We are backing the fair tax as it.
Well, but when you say you're backing the fair tax, Dave, the fair tax is H.R. 25 for the last 15 years.
You know,
I mean, I don't know what fair tax are you fair tax are you supporting then?
A national consumption tax of 30%.
Okay, so you're telling me it's not the bill that's in Congress for 15 years?
It is not the bill that's in Congress for 15 years. It is a consumption tax on new retail goods and services.
Tell me where the fair tax is
presented 2 decades ago. And that's the textbook we're using, the textbook that's 2 decades old.
Where is the bill that you're talking? Is there a bill that you're talking about?
There's not a bill that we're talking about.
There's not a bill that you're talking about.
We are proposing a fair tax.
So how is one to study what you're proposing?
Just like you're proposing. How are they? Well, go and read the books. Go and read
Which books, Dave?
The fair tax book is a good start.
You talk about Neil Bortz's 2 books?
Yeah. That's a good start.
He's talking. Neil Bortz is writing about H.R. 25.
No, Neil Bortz's book predates H.R. 25.
Neil Bortz is addressing H.R. 25.
I see. Okay, well, what's the copyright date on Neil Bortz's book?
I don't have it in front of me. I don't have it in front of me.
How long has H.R. 25 been around? Hold on, because I have it in front of me.
H.R. 25 has been around 15 years.
15 years.
Well, you can get that. Fine, take a look. But let's move on. The bill that the rest of us know as H.R. 25, the fair tax, has this requirement for you to claim the exemption for used goods. You have to have – what's that?
It does, yes. We specifically address that.
Oh, okay. And you saying you don't like that. But right now it's in the bill. But the point we were talking about is that this person, if this person either buys used goods and gets the receipt, or if she buys on the new American black market, she buys for cash and she's ahead. She's ahead of the game. And you know, you said she's only a single person. Let me, I can do the math. Let's say she said you have her with 2 kids. She gets a prebate of $2,640 plus $18 is about $4,500 she gets in a prebate. This woman with 2 children, $4,500. Now, if she and that assumes that this woman spends $19,500. Now, Suppose she only earns $15,000 a day. Suppose that's all she earns, $15,000. That prebate's going to give her more money than she's going to spend, even if she spends every dime of it at Walmart.
Hold on one Dave? Second. I'm here. I'm going back to the exercise.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
So if she only has $15,000, if she only earns $15,000, and she gets treated as if she spent $19,500, so we're just giving her extra money. And I think, and I know the fair tax advertisements say that, and they admit that, that it makes believe she spends the whole $19,500, even if she doesn't have $19,500. And secondly, if this woman buys on the black market, the fair tax doesn't care. It gives her the prebate as if she spent it all at Walmart and paid full fair tax. She's bound to come out ahead. So that's how I say that it gives this woman, it guarantees, and there's many other examples I could give you, it gives this woman more dollars in prebate than she pays in fair tax.
Okay.
Take a very simple list. I mean, just to make numbers, it assumes this woman spends $19,500. Suppose she only has $15,000 to spend. That's all she makes, and she spent and $5,000 of that she spends on the black market. This woman will only pay $2,300 in fair tax, and yet she gets a check of $4,500 from us. She has a $2,200 profit on the fair tax. The prebate in excess of fair tax paid. That's how it happens, Dave. And there's more examples. There's more examples like that.
There are examples, Steve, of what you're talking about, and they are
right.
They are actually people who are making enormously more amounts of money off of flat taxpayers than they are off of fair taxpayers.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by that, but a 10% flat tax.
Well, what I'm saying is, if you're going to go to a 10% flat tax, and I'm going to pay 10% of what I make, and you're going to pay 10% of what you make,
right?
What are you keep talking about this hypothetical new black market? What are you going to do about the real 30% of the American public who don't work, who don't pay taxes, who get? Are you going to completely eliminate welfare with your 10% as part of your tax bill?
No.
Are you going to completely eliminate food stamps as part of your tax bill?
Dave, okay, I'd like to answer your question, Dave. And
okay.
I'm glad it's a good question. Dave, first of all, I'm not a fan of welfare. One thing that my tax does and the bill HR 1040 does. It eliminates refundable tax credits, and you know what those are, don't you?
Yes.
Okay, that's welfare, and it's probably half fraudulent. The first thing my bill does, and HR 1040, is it gets rid of all credits, including those refundable tax credits. So to that extent, it reduces tax welfare. It gets welfare the heck out of the tax code. Welfare doesn't belong in the tax code. If it belongs any place, and that's a big if, it's outside the tax code. Welfare is welfare. This is a tax code. This is revenue raising to pay the nation's bills. So first, I agree with HR 1040 to eliminate refundable tax credits, so that reduces tax welfare, gets tax welfare out of the code. My 10% tax has zero exemptions, so everybody pays from dollar one.
Right.
And I think that and that means that a poor working person with income pays some income tax. And
right.
And I and Benjamin Carson believe that they should. Okay. Now, welfare. Now, that's the only way I address welfare. And you don't get more welfare. You still should pay for your own Social Security. There's enough wealth redistribution in Social Security and Medicare as it is. And I would like to cut those back. I'd love to fix that as well. But I can't fix everything at once. Now, all the rest of the things you talked about welfare, those are programs outside of the tax code. Now, to answer your question, not in the tax code. I'm talking about welfare itself. We have somewhere between $600 and $1 trillion a year that this country spends on welfare programs. And, Dave, there are 70-some-odd federal welfare programs that have no clue what the other one's doing. They're running helter-skelter, and they're giving away a tremendous amount of our money. One thing I would do is to separately, not part of the tax code, separately, I would try to get some rationalization to America's welfare program to have one single coordinated welfare program that puts all the takes all the 70 programs and puts them into one, and we have one comprehensive program. And the first thing I would do after that, or while I'm doing that, is to put back the work to, the work requirements that President Obama signed out of these programs. Put a work requirement in. I would go revisit welfare. Welfare at one point in this nation used to be a minimalist program. It would be a subsistence level, and it would be temporary. Okay. Today, where we've come to this god-awful position, as your hero Mike Huckabee says, the average welfare, the average welfare benefits $40,000, and the average wage is only $30,000. We've made welfare far too attractive. So step one in what I would do is to reorganize welfare into a single program, make it sensible, put back work requirements, make it temporary, make it subsistence, and thereby get people off the welfare rolls, as Congress did in the 90s when they enacted welfare reforms. Some states found that their welfare rolls dwindled to next to nothing. And not that they dwindled because people were out in the street dying, Dave. People got jobs. It gently nudged people out the door, and they got jobs, and people felt better about themselves. So I would reform the whole system, but 99% of it, Dave, outside the tax system. I don't think you should use the tax system to as a welfare tool. It's mucking it up. It should be done nothing but to raise revenue to pay for the military and a few other little things that the Constitution said the country is supposed to do.
Well, now, we all agree on that. We all agree
okay.
on that.
Okay. I hope you...
So now the fair taxes is 4.5%.
What do you mean 4.5% of what?
Well, I mean, you know, when we get that spending down to where you want it, yeah.
Oh, no. Well, no. By the way, you sort of confused me. But the fact is... Right now, you know, you were right that the fair tax is attempting to replace the revenue that we have today, not to increase it, okay,
right.
just to replace it, to keep politics out. And it's not going to collect it, Dave, because you assume zero cheating, and it's just forgive me, Dave, but an absurd.
But wait a second. You've assumed the same thing.
What do you mean I've assumed the same thing?
You've assumed that General Electric doesn't get to cheat.
Okay, hold on a second. No. Okay, let me back you up, Dave. You said you mentioned General Electric, and by the way, I was a CPA. I studied the General Electric case, and people use that and they abuse that example. People, I looked at that. Most of the reason that General Electric did not pay tax that year, Dave, is they had a huge loss in the year before that they were carrying forward. They lost a ton of money. And corporations get screwed when they have losses, frankly, forgive my French, but they can only carry it back 2 years, and they kind of carry it forward for 20 years. Even if they pay trillions of dollars in taxes more than 2 years ago, they can only carry it back 2 years, and they carry it forward for only 20 years. Okay? It's not a free and unfettered use of their own losses. It's the government saying, heads I win, tails you lose. So corporations have a
– What caused
corporations
the loss?
What caused the loss? They had a terrible. I think they had a huge problems. They had huge problem, financial problems in their GE credit unit. I think it was. They lost a ton of money. The insurance business and the financial business lost a lot of money 1 year. It was a disaster in the financial markets, and they lost a lot of money. And so they carried it forward. So and then about a third of their earnings were overseas. And so the fact is that if they didn't distribute earnings back to the United States, they don't pay any more tax. So I mean, it's phony to say that they cheated or they did something. Okay.
So, now wait a second.
Let me just finish the other side of that point. The important thing is that what this bill H.R. 1040, what I fully agree with, get rid of the corporate income tax. In effect, we make a very simple definition of taxable income. I don't fully understand the one in the bill, but I have one of my own. Simply, it's something like revenue minus business expenses, anything that's incurred to promote the business and increase revenues. It's a simple definition of income, and what the bill does and what I agree with, no corporate income tax, all of the business income on a simplified definition gets taxed to the shareholders as if every corporation in America is a subchapter S. and people pay and the shareholders pay tax on that currently. So we've gotten rid of the corporate income tax. You could file my tax return on one page, including a business tax return, one page. And the fact of the matter that if with people paying tax, we're trying to go back to another point you made, Dave, with people paying income tax at 10%, we're going to have a whole lot less cheating than we ever had before. Yes, there's some cheating now, but people will have less incentive to cheat when the income tax rate is only 10%. Okay, and the important thing there is that you didn't put it this way, but let me clarify something. Let's take using 2007 figures, Dave. We collected in those other taxes a total of about $2.3 trillion. After let's say $300-400 billion worth of evasion, after that, the fair tax is aiming for $2.3 billion before evasion. You're starting with the maximum number. Every dollar that's lost in evasion of the fair tax is a dollar short of the 2.3 net revenue target. And if there's evasion of 30%, can you imagine that? That's almost $700 billion short, Dave.
You're going to have evasion of 30%?
The U.S. Treasury – no. The short answer to your question is nobody knows. Nobody can tell, and I can't predict, and nobody can, that when you add on – to the typical, let's say, using an illustration, a 10% state and local sales tax rate, you add on 30% fair tax. So people are faced with, in your face, a 40% retail sales tax. You better believe that every man, woman, and child in this country is going to be doing everything in their power to buy on the black market. Okay. 40% when you –
even if prices go down – Even if they recognize more money in their pocket than they did with the income tax,
Dave, I have to. You're right. I have to agree with you that people will have a higher check, but after a lot of years of dealing with people and dealing with taxpayers, okay, what my argument is, and I don't care if the price goes down 5%, which is maybe the maximum I think it's going to go down before this. when you walk into that automobile dealer and you want to buy that $50,000 car, and he says to you, "Thanks, Dave, and that will be $20,000 sales tax," your blood is going to come out of your eyes. Your hair is going to go on fire. People will get ticked off. And when I talked about the rate, the Treasury a few years ago, when they looked at the fair tax, they looked at their own sales tax. They nobody can tell, so they came up with two sample rates, 15% and 30%. I mean, nobody – and that's not saying it's going to go to 30. It could go to 40. Who knows? When the sales tax rate – every economist that I've read said when the sales tax rate – and what I know intuitively from a lifetime of doing this stuff – when sales tax rates go – a combined sales tax rates go above 10%, people start to get aggravated and they start to cheat. And they know that as the tax rate goes up above north of 10%, the rate of cheating goes up geometrically. 40%, Dave. 40%. I don't care if you have a full paycheck. You're not going to be happy every time you want to spend that buck of yours to say 40%. I got to give to these devils just to enjoy the fruits of my labor. And people are going to get angry. And that's a fact of human nature. And that's part of the problem. That's what Dale Jorgensen was alluding to when he said by eliminating all these three taxes, he said, the fair tax takes on – it's too great a burden for the fair tax to carry. And this is the guy that you people paid. So it's a great idea. And you know something, Dave? Maybe it'll work at a state level. Several states are looking at the fair tax as a state-level tax.
Tennessee,
and
maybe?
What's that?
Tennessee?
We have a high sales tax. We don't have much in the way of income taxes, individual income taxes.
Right.
But North Carolina is looking at it. South Carolina is looking at it. Kansas is looking at it. You have to be careful how you do it. But it is theoretically possible. It is conceivable.
How much income tax do you have in Tennessee?
I don't know about corporations. I think they have a sort of a business tax. But individuals, all we have is a tax on interest and dividends. There's no general individual income tax.
But you take it all out on sales taxes then?
Yes, we take it all out on sales taxes. But
Tennessee,
the point is,
where does Tennessee rank in the standard of living in the 50 states?
I wouldn't know, but you know something. Let me say this to you. Okay. I'm trying to see what is the point you're trying to make. The fact that we have a sale, our budget, we're doing well here in Tennessee because our governments have traditionally balanced the budgets. We have probably the least debt of any other state. Okay, we're not like California. We've spent no insult to Californians, but to the government of California. So, you know, it's worked here, and I think. Listen, I tend to think that I'd like something different, but I tend to think that a sales tax probably does work better than an income tax at the state level. But understand, put it in perspective. That's why I say it could possibly work at a state level. A 10% sales tax on everything you buy, on virtually everything you buy, is tough enough of a pill to swallow, Dave. But a 40% tax on everything you buy is you'll choke on. That's too much.
Where does Tennessee rank in business in economic growth in the 50 states?
I don't know. We're doing pretty well. I can't tell you.
Now Missouri has no debt. Missouri has a constitutional requirement that we balance the budget each and every year. No debt, zero debt. We even have a surplus rainy day fund. Where does Missouri rank with its high level of income tax in the standard of living of the 50 states?
I don't know.
In the bottom ten.
Well, but Dave, are you suggesting it's because the way they tax?
I'm suggesting that businesses would rather go to Tennessee than Missouri. Yeah, I'm suggesting that businesses would rather thrive in Tennessee than in Missouri.
I would agree with that. Let me ask you this, Dave: Does Missouri have a right as a right to work state?
No.
Ah. You know, that's another really important issue. That is
an argument that I expect of income taxers, but it's a whole different argument, you know, because you not only believe the government gets to know how much people make, you believe that the government gets to decide who I can hire and who I can't hire.
With a right to work state, the government's getting the heck out of my business. The government can't tell me who I have to hire and fire.
They tell you in Tennessee that you cannot deny a person employment based on their union status.
No, wait a minute. No, that's not my understanding, Dave. A right to work state. Tennessee is a right to work state. An employer, my understanding of right to work is an employer can fire you. I don't think he can fire you by virtue of discrimination, of age, et cetera, discrimination. But the employer does not need a reason to fire you. He does not have to have a union workers. The employer is free to hire and fire as he sees fits.
Now, that's a whole different union, that's hire at will. That's not right to work.
Well,
that's hire at will.
Okay. My understanding, Dave, is that we are going to be in a right to work state. The employers have a great deal more freedom to hire and fire, and unions hate it because apparently a union can't force you. You can't be forced to join a union, and the union cannot destroy an employer.
In Tennessee. If I run a grocery store, I cannot say you have to be in the union to cut meat in my store. I cannot say that in Tennessee.
That's right.
What?
So, which means you can hire people who are...
The government gets to tell me as the owner of the grocery store that I am not allowed to only hire union meat cutters?
Well, say that. You're confusing me.
The government tells me I own a grocery store. And the government tells me through force of law, that I cannot close my shop to union meat cutters. I, the grocery store owner, cannot say, I won't hire you unless you're in the union.
He can't say, I won't hire you. I'm confused about what that means.
I own a grocery store, Steve.
Yeah?
I own a grocery store.
Yeah.
I do not want any union people working at my cash register or carrying out groceries.
And in a right to work
state, they cost me too much money.
I reserve
the right as the owner of the grocery store to say I'm not hiring any union people to check groceries.
I think that's what a right to work state does. I think
that,
that's what
it
our
is.
Right.
It is, but also, yes. I don't want any meat cutters who aren't union meat cutters. You have to be in the union to cut meat in my store. I can't say that anymore. I cannot say you have to be in the union to get a job here. I cannot make being in the union a condition of you working it behind my meat counter.
I don't know. You might be right. So you're saying that the government in that case, because the state law, by the way, it's not a federal law, the state law may say that you cannot demand that somebody be in a union, and so you're saying that takes away the employer's right, but you know, there's a balancing there. It also gives employees who are not in the union more freedom. The other side of that, the complement to that, Dave, is that you're taking away the right of any person who cannot work unless he's in the union.
Well, that person doesn't have a right to work in my damn store under their terms. They have a right to work in my store under my terms.
Well,
I can't come into my store tomorrow and say, okay, from now on everyone has to wear blue ties, because that violates someone's right who doesn't want to wear a blue tie.
Dave, I think we're getting off the topic here, Dave, but the point of the matter is this. Look, I think on balance, because I've said this is not my area of specialization. I can't speak with authority to it. But the point is, on balance, the people, for example, of the state of Tennessee have found that employers and employees have more freedom when we have a right to work law. Okay, whatever freedoms are given up in that, there's greater freedom in having a right to work, being a right to work state.
What businesses have found, and this is documented. I didn't expect your call, so I don't have any of the documentation here. But is that businesses like the tax environment in Tennessee over the tax environment in Missouri?
Well, I think I didn't practice here, so I don't know. But I thought there are some business taxes and there are no individual income taxes. But that may be so. But I think that there are other things. Tennessee has, as I said, the right to work. Tennessee is one of the lowest cost of living states in the union, and Tennessee has phenomenal climate. So we have a governor who's a business person and he's doing his best to make business feel welcome here. I think it's a very good place to do business, a good place to live, and a good place to do business. But I wouldn't put it all. You know, listen, I'm very sensitive to tax matters, but I wouldn't put the whole thing on taxes. But we're getting off the topic, Dave. The fact of the matter is, a fair tax could possibly work at a state level with even a 10% tax on everything you buy, but it's a whole nother kettle of fish to take that and make it a 40% tax. For everything the federal government spends, it just is too much. It just doesn't work. We'll have a revolution.
Oh, we might, and that would be good. We might have a revolution toward downward government spending as a result of the fact that people see how much money they're paying.
Well, you know, first of all, you know something, I don't mind people seeing it. And by the way, when you said it's not the government that did that fooling people don't know how much pay they have, it's because Americans are ignorant. You know, they can look at their tax return at the end of the year and see the total. They look at their W-2 and see how much was withheld. They could tell that very easily if they had the slightest bit of education. You know, right now we have half the people in this country paying no income tax, half. And the fair tax will make that worse. So I don't think that the fair tax is going to be improving that circumstance. There's going to be fewer. There's going to be a smaller minority paying all the tax under the fair tax. And they will be, they can be outvoted by the majority that will pay zero or negative taxes. So, Dave, I don't think the fair tax puts us in a better position. It just it makes a bad situation worse. The fair tax increases the roles of the negative taxpayers. Bad mistake.
Okay. So, folks, feel free to call 347-677-1835 if you want to get involved in this conversation. Remember back now to the very first show that we had. When I gave you a comprehensive list of the people who were going to fight against the fair tax, who were the who was the third person on the list? You had politicians who use the current tax code for power. You have corporations who use the current tax code to buy political power and to damage their competition. And who was the third group of people? Accountants and lawyers. Accountants and lawyers who make their money off the current tax code. And if I'm not mistaken, Steve, you're an accountant?
I was an accountant. I'm retired, and not one dime of my retirement income depends upon any given tax system. And in any event, my flat tax, people can file their own return on one page. So it does not matter to me one penny what the tax system is. I don't make any money off the tax system.
Anymore.
And my retirement income doesn't depend 1 cent on what happens to the tax system.
Does it depend at all on the money that you made by caring about the tax system?
Does it? I'm not sure.
In other words, drawing retirement money now on the money that you made by exploiting the tax system.
Well, my two things come to mind. I'm not sure what you're asking, but yes, my IRA distributions are, I would have to pay tax on them, and under a very flat tax, I would pay a little less tax. Okay, but the fact is I resent under the fair tax. Okay, to the extent that I have savings that are already paid income tax on, I'm now going to pay 30% when I spend it again. I paid income tax. I have money. Let's say I have $100,000 in the bank that I paid income tax on. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, when I spend that $100,000, I got another 30% tax to pay on it. So I paid income tax on it in the first place, and now I'm going to pay fair tax on it.
Well, that is a downside.
And you know what else? You know what else, Dave? Okay, I'm over 65 years old. I've stopped working. Okay, I've paid all my Social Security and Medicare taxes. Guess what? By paying fair tax, I'm paying Social Security and Medicare tax all over again.
Well, that is true.
True.
That is true.
So I don't know how else to answer your question. I mean, I don't want to pay tax and start paying tax again under the fair tax. I don't mind paying a 10% tax on my with no deductions, but I'll pay 10%. It may be more, maybe less than what I would pay on my IRA distributions. It's just that it's so much simpler. To me, a 10% tax with no deductions, no nothing, is a good answer. It's a really good answer. It's simple. It's simple for everybody. Puts the IRS in handcuffs. They have nothing to do, Dave. Virtually nothing to do. Okay, and it makes filing very simple. People will not make decisions in their lifetime over a measly 10% tax. It frees people up. It cures 95% of the problems. Let me put it this way.
Have you done the math? Have you done the math, Steve? I mean, is 10%
yes,
revenue?
Yes, I did the math.
Is 10% revenue neutral?
10% is revenue neutral for the income tax, and I think I could even get in the corporate income tax in there as well. Yes, I think that'll do it. And you know something, Dave? Here's the point. We did some an economist and I did some back of the envelope stuff. I don't want to, you know, we didn't spend a fortune to do. We did some calculations and it works. But you know what my attitude is, Dave? If I was a little, it does not fix the Social Security, Medicare, and it shouldn't. Those are separate. But here's the bottom line of what I'm saying to you. If I was a little short from current revenues, so be it. So be it. So be it. Starve the beast a little bit. We need a fair result. And by the way, Dave, the fair tax, besides being short by all of the cheat by all the tax evasion, it's also short a couple of percentage points because they rounded down the calculation. It should have been
You actually rounded up the calculation because doing a conversion from 23% inclusive to 30% exclusive rounds up about a point and a quarter.
Wrong. It's 29.87. Yep. It's 29.87, Dave. It's 23 inclusive is 29.8. I think it's 29.87. It's just a hair under 30%. Okay? And the part of that, Dave, if you look at the calculations that the fair tax did, the rate they needed was 23.84%. Okay? They just rounded down 0.84. So that would round, that 23.84, I think, rounds to about the 23.84, I'll tell you in 14 seconds here. 23.84 rounds to about 31-32% is what it really needs to be. But they just arbitrarily, the fair tax just arbitrarily rounded down to 23.84 down to 23. So they're short to begin with. So if my 10% tax was a little bit short, so be it, but it is. I don't think it is. I think I can cover it. But let it be short. You know what I really believe, and my economic guess, Dave, is as good as anybody that went to Harvard or any PhD economist. I think with a 10% flat tax, I think our economy will take off, and I think that 10% will produce more and more revenue each year. Not that I want to give those rascals more revenue, but at 10%, I think the people will be happy. Coming from where we are, Dave, with these outrageous.
What is 10%? Now, remind me again. What have you done with corporate tax?
Corporate taxes have disappeared, but business income, all of business income, Dave, in effect, under a very simple definition, all sales, all revenue, minus all costs that produce revenues, minus all costs, period.
Mm-hmm.
That simple definition of net income gets taxed to all shareholders and owners, if the business was a partnership or a sub-act.
Basically, you've just changed the name of the corporate income tax to what are you going to call it now?
As the bills call it, it's called a business income tax.
You've changed the name of the corporate income tax to a business tax.
Yes, but it's more than a name change, Dave. I'm taking all that nonsense out of it, and I say the definition of business income is all business revenues minus all proper business expenses. Period.
Let's just look at an example, okay? Can General Electric, a company with a long history of making exemplary electronic products, can they go out and start a bank and lose a shitload of money and write that all off?
Well, listen, now you're getting complicated. I would allow that you're talking about a very complex tax thing about consolidated tax returns. I would leave that in place. That if a company was a conglomerate and it would take the net profit from all of its businesses. Okay, and by the way, it can't go out and just lose money. If it really loses money without these things like advanced deductions, like accelerated depreciation, if it really loses money on a cash basis, then it should be able to deduct that loss. But it's only 10%. They're not going to go crazy with a 10%, and GE is not going to pay the 10%. The shareholders are. So there's not going to be the Mickey Mouse around that we have today. You're not going to have special rules like oil and gas, which has a depletion allowance where you can get some losses up front. And you could so all that garbage goes away, Dave.
Now, wait a second. So GE ends the year with a profit after business expenses of
right.
$120 million.
Right.
That money is sitting in Bank of America.
Right.
And you do what? You charge 10% of that to the shareholders?
I say, Dave, let's say Dave owns all of GE, okay? The GE gives Dave a 1099 for $120 million, mm-hmm. and Dave pays a tax of $12 million, and Dave is going to be sure, because GE will absolutely do this, GE will declare a dividend of $12 million to Dave, and the dividend won't be taxable, so that Dave has the cash to pay that dividend. Your dividend will be at least equal to the tax that you have to pay.
I see. So what you've done is you've built a real incentive for me to invest in GE, haven't you?
I have. I've built in an incentive, A, for you to go to work, and B, for you to – the incentive for you to – no, there's no bigger incentive for you to invest in GE. Only in the sense that you don't pay a tax on a dividend anymore. You will pay tax on GE's profits each year, okay, and assume that GE will give you a dividend enough to pay the tax. And so in that sense, it's slightly better than today. Well, it's better than today in two ways. A, GE does not have to deal with all this tax garbage anymore. So GE is going to be more profitable. And B, you won't pay tax on the dividends. So it's there'll be some improvement, but it's not you'll be incentivized to go to work and to invest, which is what's wrong with that.
How am I incentivized to invest in GE if my dividend is going to go to zero to pay for their profit?
What do you mean your dividend is going to go to zero? I understand that. What do you mean?
I mean they're going to pay me enough dividend to pay the tax. I just
made that up. They could pay you a greater. They're not going to pay you less than the tax because they know they have to. So their dividend could be higher than the tax.
So GE then does not end up with $100 million profit in the Bank of America. They've paid it all out to me to pay the tax.
No. They've paid at least 10% out to you. If GE made $120 million and you have to pay $12 million tax, they're going to give you at least 12 of the $120 so you can pay that tax. They may give you more, so they'll have at least $108 million. They may give you a little bit more of it.
They may.
Yeah, they may. So I just think that makes a whole lot more sense.
Where is the incentive there for foreign companies to move to the United States?
The incentive is first of all that instead of if a company a foreign company moved here, and by the way, let me digress for one second. You mentioned they'll come here study after study, Dave. I've only heard of one study and some Princeton study, but nobody has been able to produce this study or to tell us how it was conducted. I mean, it's mythical, okay? But a foreign company would come here because, A, there's no business income tax. We would have to collect that 10% tax on their shareholders. I would think that if a German manufacturing company, if Mercedes, which already has some plants here, wants to come here, they would come here. They would pay no income tax. They would take the profits that they would earn here, and in effect, they have to pay 10% tax on behalf of their shareholders. I think Mercedes would be thrilled to pay 10% to the United States. Thrilled, and they don't have to do all this nonsense of the filing and a deal with our corporate tax law. 10% is a simple low rate. They would be thrilled to death. They would pay the tax on behalf of their foreign shareholders.
So does GE pay any tax for that year that they lost a bunch of money at GE Money Bank?
No, if they really lost money, if on a consolidated basis they lost money, I would say no, they don't pay tax that year. They carry that loss forward. You should only pay a tax if you make money.
Okay. So they're really.
But I'm glad you asked the question that way, Dave. Companies, a foreign company would they flock here? Are you kidding? Pay a simple 10% of profits on a simple basis. Do you know how they count taxes in Germany are almost as bad as they are in this country. They're complex and they're very heavy taxes. Companies would flock here. A lot of companies went to Ireland with a 12.5% corporate income tax, which would be a lot simpler than my 10% tax. My 10% tax would be a lot simpler than that. But Ireland got tons of business at 12.5%. We would effectively have a very simple 10% tax.
Hey, this is Dave. Who's this?
Hi, my name's Joe. I was on your show a couple of weeks ago.
Hey, Joe.
How you doing? I wrote some comments in the chat if you want to take a look at them.
Steve's here.
Huh?
Steve's here.
Oh, okay. So unless you guys really know about corporate accounting, it's mainly flying by the seat of your pants, and it sounds like to me. I don't think that you've actually thought out the plan well enough. I think that Dave is asking you some pretty poignant questions. Not to say that you shouldn't think about this a little bit more in the future, because I'm in favor of a fair flat tax. But accounting is based on a lot of definitions, and if you define losses different than what's defined now in corporate accounting, then your plan will have to abide by that particular definition. If that definition is going to be the same, then, of course, your plan will have to abide by that. I think that you have to think out your plan a little bit more, because when people do ask you very pointed as well as poignant questions, you'll be able to answer them with more authority.
Steve!
Joe, let me tell you something, Joe. I spent my life as a CPA, tax lawyer CPA, okay? So I do know a fair amount about this stuff. Now, it's true, I had not, you know, nobody had before asked me this thing about how what companies would do with losses. It's the germ of an idea, and I can just by defining taxable income in a simple way, I can define losses in a simple way as well. It's really an easy thing to do, Joe. Okay? It's really easy if you're willing to do it. I mean, I'm willing to get rid of this crazy tax system we have. It's awful. And I made a living at it, Joe. It's awful. And I want to be the first one in line to say that. But you can make something a lot simpler. I have not written a 130-page statute, okay? But I think it can be. We can start. I would make a few more changes to the individual income tax. We've got to start somewhere, Joe. And I think we can
mark,
if we
market don't. Type of accounting, which got us all in.
What's that?
I'm sorry, Joe. I had you turned off. Now I'm giving you each a turn to talk without being driven over by the other one. So go ahead, Joe.
Well, I would hope that you would eliminate the mark-to-market type of accounting, which got us all in trouble with Enron, and I think GE in the past. I think GM in the past. So if you got rid of that and made everything very, very simple, that would be good. Again, go ahead.
Joe, I couldn't agree with you more, Joe. That mark to market, by the way, Joe, help me here. I was on the tax side, and I had fun with the guys on the audit side. I think that mark to market there's some accounting rules there, and there were some tax rules on that. But Joe, my goal is to simplify. I really would like a business to be able to prepare a simple tax return on one page. I want to get rid of as much of that garbage that you refer to as possible. I'm with you, Joe. I'm absolutely with you.
Oh yeah.
The average business guy, Joe, should be able to do his individual and his business tax return. It could be real simple. Now I know it's easier said than done. I mean, you know, it's easier to say that. But if you, I'm, you know, listen. Remember, I profited from this complexity, mm-hmm. and I'm not ashamed of it. I mean, I worked hard. But the fact is, it's awful. It doesn't do any of us any good. And Dave, I'm just as avid of getting rid of this current system as you are. So if we could, but so I want to work hard. I want to cut, make it simple as possible, and have individuals and businesses be able to do it as simply as possible. I want to make it down to as simple as humanly possible.
Okay, gentlemen, we're up against a break. I'm going to put you. I'm going to keep you both though through the break if you'll stay, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more, folks. This has been an interesting conversation. I've enjoyed it a lot. Hang with us, and we're going to come right back.
$250,000, you will not see your taxes increase by a single dime.
Specifically said.
Stop. Stop.
Hello?
Will you?
Hello?
Stop, Dave. Will you
Joe?
Stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
On September 15, 1787, the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia took up debate on whether or not to allow amendments to the new Constitution and, if so, what method of amending should be adopted. Initially, it was proposed that only the legislature could make an amendment. Quoting from James Madison's notes of that very day, Colonel Mason thought the plan of amending the Constitution exceptionable and dangerous, as the proposing of amendments is in both the nodes to depend in the first immediately, in the second ultimately, on Congress. No amendments of the proper kind would ever be obtained by the people if the government should become oppressive, as he verily believed would be the case. Unquote. There followed a strenuous debate and many propositions, motions, votes, and refinements that arrived at the article as it exists today, giving states and the people the power to meet to amend the Constitution with no regard for the legislature or executive. The time that Mason foresaw, the time of oppressive national government, has arrived. Join us on Monday night in the Hour of Truth as we explore this method of peaceful revolution. We'll discuss how, when, and why. And we will be glad to hear your opinions on exactly what we need to do to fix the issues we face today, using Article 5 of the Constitution. Can we? Will we take our government by the horns, wrestle it to the ground, and return our republic to a government that serves the states and the people? Let's talk about it. Mondays, 7 p.m., the Hour of a Truth. Call and participate on the studio line 347-677-1835.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have, because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families, and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's responsibility and not just the household, then we start making better investments.
That's the government we're talking about trying to change right there. If we can get rid of this idea that your children belong to you, go figure. Okay, I've got two guests on the line now, and we're going to finish up here. We've got about 15 minutes left. I've got Joe from Indiana, who's a flat taxer, and I've got Steve from Tennessee, who's a flat taxer. Now, I want to say real quickly before we get back to the discussion, Missouri Grassroots Radio is here, and we thank Missouri Grassroots Coalition for giving us this time. I will be back on Monday night with the Hour of Truth. We'll continue our weekly discussion on Article 5 of the Constitution of the United States and how we go about fixing that. We've been on that for a year, Mark Levin, so we thank you for getting on board, and we thank you for coming along and lending some impetus to this. On Tuesday nights, Cynthia Davis comes along with Homefront, talks about conservative values and what the government is doing to undermine you and your family. On Wednesday night, Lisa Payne Nager, the culture vigilante, comes along. We've got a new and exciting Thursday night show. coming along. Michael Evans is going to be joining us on Thursday nights. And then we've got something coming quickly on Friday nights, something new and exciting. Kevin has left us. He's gone on. He's got his own primetime real live radio show now. We'll miss him. Kevin's still a dear friend, and we'll have him back once in a while, and we'll chat with him. And then on Saturday of next week, I'll be back with the next installment of the Fair Tax Show. Remember now, I'm going to get in a word here because I've pretty much given the show to these flat taxers, and we've just let them have their way tonight. I want to get back to exactly where we started, okay? The government bureaucracy that built itself up around the income tax, a tax on income, did not do so overnight. The evil inherent in the current system is that it taxes income. There is no huge bureaucracy to be built around a simple taxing of consumption. There is a huge bureaucracy and a huge corruption mechanism built into taxing income and taxing, we're going to hear from the property taxers next week, and taxing property. There is a huge incentive there to shift burden. And a flat tax sounded good to me. I was a flat taxer 8 or 9 years ago. And then I started looking at the history of the income tax and how it slowly evolved into what it is today. And there is no way you keep a flat tax system under wraps, under control. That's my opinion. We've got Joe here who has a different opinion. We've got Steve here who has a different opinion. Start with you, Joe. You're back on the air, man.
Okay. Well, I like the theory of the flat tax because if it's a – let's say it's 10%. Now, remember, I had spoken to you a few weeks ago about it, and we had... Can you hear me now?
I can hear you, yeah.
Okay. I was saying that a fair tax, a flat tax, I'm for it because if it's 10%, that's good. But the major reason why the flat tax would work would be, and you and I discussed this a few weeks ago, would be that the government would have to be reduced to a very, very, very small kind of government that the flat tax would accommodate. If the flat tax, let's say if the government kept growing, didn't shrink, then you would have to increase the flat tax. Then we have another monster in the soup.
Okay, so Joe. Go ahead.
Dave?
Go ahead. Okay, your turn's coming, Steve. Joe, but to that I say, if you want to play that game, and I will agree with you, as will any libertarian, that the government is huge, it's way too huge, it's probably 10 times too big, then yeah, you can come in with a 10% flat tax, and I can come in with a 6% fair tax.
Okay, whatever tax works. I don't
yeah.
care.
Go ahead, Steve.
I think we're confusing two things. We're trying to raise the same amount of revenue from the income tax. We're not changing the total. And by the way, you had mentioned at the start of the show, Dave, reducing spending $14 trillion. Well, we only spend just under $4 trillion a year, so there's not that much room
yeah.
to go. But let's divorce people. Let's not talk about the $4 trillion in spending. We're talking about the revenue that we're raising. So whether the tax is a 10% flat tax or a 30% fair tax, those two, except for the fact that the flat tax does not change the Social Security, they're still raising the same revenue. So don't talk about spending in talking about the revenue raising. You're confusing the issue. Okay, 10% flat tax would replace the current income tax. A 30% sales tax would replace the current income tax and the payroll taxes. They theoretically raise the same amount of money, although the fair tax will not raise that 30% because of evasion. It'll come far short. But I want to come back to a couple of things you just said, Dave. First of all, you say that flat tax will not stay flat. You're not that you're right, but here's the point. We cannot control future Congresses. Just like my 10% flat tax can be made worse in future years, the fair tax can be made worse in future years. They are both equally vulnerable to future Congresses. It's up to us to hold Congress's feet to the fire. So it's not an advantage one over the other. They're both equally deficient in that regard because we can't control future Congresses. And the second thing you talk about reducing, not forgetting reducing the size of the government, were you referring to reducing the size of the Internal Revenue Service? If you were, Dave, that a truly flat tax can reduce the size of the Internal Revenue Service, a truly flat tax. A fair tax, on the other hand, although you say that it will reduce the size of the federal government, first of all, we now have all these state auditors who, although they may be on the payroll of the states, they are working under the direction of the new IRS, the Sales Tax Administration Authority, which is a federal agency. It's the new IRS, and these people are all enforcing federal law. The fair tax is a federal law that they're enforcing. And the federal government is going to be in control of the rules of how that works. It's a federal law. So we still have an IRS. And the major thing that the fair taxes don't really tell you, Dave, is the fact is in the statute, in the fair tax statute, there's a provision, Section 101D, which says that you, Dave Court, you are personally liable to pay the fair tax, just like I'm sure Missouri has a use tax. That if you buy something out of state, Dave, you've got to pay the state of Missouri its sales tax. So the fair tax says that you, Dave Court, are responsible for paying the fair tax unless you got a receipt. Okay? Now, there is going to be the new IRS is going to come to you, Dave, and it's going to ask to see your receipt. But worse than that, the IRS is going to come to you and say, well, I need to figure out exactly how much sales tax Dave Court should have paid. I mean, he's an honest-looking guy, but I can't go by an honest face. I've got to see how, and there's only one way for the new IRS to figure out, Dave, how much fair tax you paid. They've got to go through all your records and see how much money you took in and how much money came out. Only then, when they see how much you spent in total, do they know how much fair tax you should have paid. That audit, Dave, will be far more invasive than any IRS audit that takes place today. And someday, a year later, they're going to turn that audit into an annual filing. It'll be an annual fair tax summary that you'll have to file. And you'll have to divulge all your receipts and all your expenditures, and then you're going to have to produce fair tax receipts for everything that you've spent. And for what you can't produce receipts for, you're going to owe with interest and penalties. And that IRS will probably be bigger than the IRS that we have today. Now, it'll be some people working for the federal government, some people working at the state level, but working for, under the direction of, the new IRS. So people kidding yourself. And I want to come from one more subject. We said this thing about the future years, that we can't control future Congresses. The fair tax, by its terms, repeals the current income tax, but it cannot repeal the 16th Amendment. Now, the fair tax has a provision in it, a sunset clause, that if the 16th Amendment is not repealed in 7 years, the fair tax disappears. It's like the sheriff in Blazing Saddles putting the gun to his own head. Well, you know what's going to happen? I mean, you have to be able, you've got to see this 2020. By the end of the seventh year, when the 16th Amendment is not repealed, the Congress is going to say, well, we're just going to repeal the Sunset Clause. And what do we have? We have the fair tax. And guess what? We still have the 16th Amendment. At that point, we get, if not sooner, we have the fair tax plus the brand new income tax, which they're going to need because the revenues are going to be short because of evasion. They have to maintain the revenues. So we will have a fair tax and an income tax. And one great advantage, I believe, of having a flat tax right now is if we had never adopted a sales tax, like the fair tax, the chances of Congress ever giving us that sales tax for the first time are less than if we go with a fair tax today. If we go with a fair tax today, sure as shooting, we're going to wind up with both. And it'd be very easy. If we had an income tax for 100 years, it would be very easy for Congress to bring back another income tax. once they repeal Section 401, the sunset clause. Very easy. But if we never adopt a sales tax, we're in a better strategic position to never getting a sales tax.
So basically, because we can control future Congresses, the 10% flat tax is virtually uncorruptible. But because
we can't control future Congresses, we can't control it with either tax. We can't control it with a 10% flat tax, and we can't control it with a 30% fair tax. We can't control future Congresses no matter what we do.
I'm going to have to agree. So the whole thing about talking about taxes is very, very theoretical, because I'm of the opinion that most of Congress is corrupt. Well, the first thing
Amen.
That has to be on the agenda for American people is not to think about the tax per se, but to think about getting rid of the agencies and the wasteful elements within the federal government.
Amen.
So,
amen. Amen. And listeners, we talk about that on Monday night on our Article 5 show. But I contend that there is no better way to get the American people interested in changing the Congress than by putting the tax that they pay right in front of their face.
Well, let me disagree with you on that, because I think Americans have reached the point of apathy of no return. There have been so many instances, and this is a bromide that I made up. There have been so many stupid, because people think Congress isn't corrupt. They just think they may be stupid. So they believe, and here's what I believe, rather. There have been too many stupid things done too often to create so much damage to have been done by stupid people.
But what I'm suggesting, Joe, is that the average American doesn't realize that he's paying about 50% of his income in tax right now.
I think they do. When they start paying, when they get their income, and when they try to budget, if they even do budget, and they have to pay out what they have to pay in the federal income tax, state income tax, city income tax, and they have no money left at the end of the year because of their expenditures and the taxes taken out because of state tax, excise tax, et cetera, they realize it. They just don't want to fight City Hall. I've been talking to a lot of people for a long time, and the major impression I get across the board is that either they don't know, or even if they do know, they don't care.
And, Joe, what Dave is proposing, this fair tax, is going to make our situation worse. Those of us who are paying tax really do know how much we're paying. The problem that the fair tax makes even worse is that half the people are paying nothing. They don't care how much we pay. And what the fair tax does is take the half that's not paying and make them bump that up to 55-60%. The fact that 40%, Dave, know that they may be a little bit more aware. I don't think much more, but they're gonna, even if 40%, 45% of the people are a little bit more aware of how much tax they pay, it's not going to matter, because they're going to be outvoted by the 55% who pay nothing and want us to keep paying more. That's the problem with the fair tax. It just makes that non-tax-paying group bigger, and they're already at 50%.
Well, I have to agree with him, and I think any tax that comes in, regardless of whether it's the fair tax, flat tax, Martian tax, if it's done incrementally, the people won't even see it coming. They won't care even if they do see it. That's how it's been done over the past, since 1913. And again,
Dave, this country, we'll get back, Dave. What you're really saying would be this, is if we now had 90% of the people paying tax, 90%, not 50%, and those 90% of the people saw how much tax they were paying, yes, we'd have a better system. And as a fact, I have another idea, but we're not going to discuss
how
it tonight.
How many people? I can't count the number of people I know on 10 hands that say, gosh, I don't have any money left. The cost of groceries is going through the roof. The cost of gasoline is atrocious. They don't say... I'm paying more tax. They say I'm paying more for groceries, but they're paying more tax.
Well, to some extent, I agree with you a little bit, Dave, that a lot of people don't know how much they're paying. But if they're in the minority, who cares? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Right now, we have half the people paying no tax, and some of those people who pay tax are so liberal that they think it's right that they should pay more, and poor people should pay little. So we're already at the tipping point where we're just about dead. So the fact is, if there's now fewer taxpayers, but they're now more aware of how much they're paying, so what? They're in a minority. It doesn't matter. We have to get to a point, Dave, where we have 90% of the people in this country paying tax and paying a substantial amount of tax and not paying a progressive tax.
Sure.
And when 90% of the people, Dave, then we act as a country, not when half of them or more than half pay nothing. And the fair tax just makes that worse, Dave, not better.
Okay, so
worse.
Here's a better answer than everything we've talked about then. No income, no tax at all on individuals. Zero. You earn as much money as you want, you keep as much money as you want, you bank as much money as you want, and all tax is then paid by corporations. Then everybody's paying tax. They just don't think they are.
But then it's hidden. That's not transparent enough. Dave, how about this, Dave? Okay? How about we take the federal budget, okay? And every family in America gets a bill, okay? And they can pay it each month. It's like the rent. You see it. But you just don't – it doesn't hit you in the face every time you go buy something. It's like your rent. It's like your mortgage.
Mm-hmm. What happens?
You see, it's obvious. You know how much it is, and you know it's got to be paid every month. And after that, you can earn whatever you feel like.
I mean, I can tell you what happens if you don't pay the rent or the mortgage. I can tell you what happens if you don't pay the car payment. What happens if you don't pay the tax bill?
Well, you know, I've been asked that question, and I have to think about that. But the number one thing I would do, I'm going to modify this idea. If you don't pay your rent, okay. The first thing is, well, here's my modification. You could still vote in the federal election, but anybody who doesn't pay gets their one vote, but people who pay their full share get 100 votes.
No. I mean, some people would go for it because they're going to feel, hey, why not? They've earned it, but no, that's not going to go over too well.
This is for discussion, Joe. You can't have people who don't pay voting and having our congressmen pander to them.
Joe, we're out of time. I'm sorry. That was great.
Okay.
I had a great time. Listen, folks, we'll be back next week. Steve and Joe, they're welcome back anytime. 347-677-1835. I'm Dave. This has been the Fair Tax Show. You're on Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. We'll see you Monday night, the Hour of Truth, and again next Saturday night for the Fair Tax Show.
Let me tell you how it was.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.